My name is Adam Hellstone. I'm with Williamsburg Learning. About 15, 16 years ago, yeah, 16 years ago now, a bunch of friends and I, who were all homeschooled, got together from college, and we created Williamsburg Learning. And we basically, we operated with about 50 schools around the United States and school districts, providing curriculum, leadership curriculum, and online education. So that's what I do. So here locally, we're available through Bonneville School District statewide in Idaho. And again, we work all over the country and all over the world with our students. Many of you have kids in the program, so thank you for that. And yeah, awesome. So let's get started. What we're gonna talk about today, are you guys getting that feedback a little bit?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm gonna come down here. Maybe that'll be a little bit further away from that mic, if that helps. Okay, which is better? Learning how to think or being told what to think? What do you think? How to think, are you sure? Really? Which is easier? Which one's easier? Being told what to think? Yeah. Yeah, so often that's the easier one, and it's what we kind of default to, okay? I'm going to teach you three principles today. So are you serious? You want to know how to think. Okay, grab something to take notes with. I'm going to give you three principles today, okay? Three principles to teach you how to think. And these are actually a little bit uncomfortable, okay? I'm not here to just kind of tell you some nice things. I'm here to make you a little uncomfortable, to challenge you in your own thinking, so that you can grow as an individual, whether you're a youth or adult. We can keep growing and changing and improving our lives. So, let's get into it. First principle is to challenge your own thinking. Now, why is that so important? We are getting lots of feedback. I wonder... Maybe. The gain is?
Just keep going. It's on, but it's not too bad.
It's not too bad? Okay, I'll come out here as far as I can. Okay. okay. So, if they would just kill those mics, that would be the best. Okay. Alright, challenge your own thinking. Why is that necessary to learn how to think? What do you think? If you're always trying to prove yourself right, are you learning? If you're always trying to prove what you already know, are you learning? So I want you to ask yourself really a hard question. When's the last time you really challenged your own thinking and changed your mind? When was the last time that you challenged your own thinking and actually changed your mind? It's not easy to do. See, we as humans, we're programmed to survive. And that survival mechanism makes us want to prove what we already think. So let's play a game. You guys ready to play a game?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it. Alright, so the game is, this is how you play this game. I'm giving you three numbers, 2, 4, 8. Okay? These numbers follow a certain mathematic principle or pattern, if you will. Okay? The name of the game is to figure out what the pattern is. The way you play is you tell me your own set of three numbers. Any numbers that you want, okay? And I will tell you whether your numbers also fit the pattern. And if they fit the pattern or not, you can decipher from that whether or not, right? Or what the pattern is, I should say. Does that make sense? Okay, so my numbers are 2, 4, 8. So raise your hand if you want to play. And what you're trying to do, again, is you're going to give me your own set of three numbers first. I'll tell you whether or not your numbers also fit the pattern or not. And then you can decipher what the pattern is. Okay, let's go right here.
3, 6, 12.
3, 6, 12. So now we have two data points, right? We have 1, 2, 4, 8, and a second set of numbers, 3, 6, 12. Okay? What's the pattern?
The second number is twice more than the first, so the third number is twice more than the second.
So in other words, doubling, right? Yeah, doubling. No, that's not the pattern. Okay, let's pause here. Okay? So we're playing this game to analyze our own thinking. Okay? Who else thought it was doubling? Raise your hand. Okay, almost everyone. So you're part of the crowd, okay? So almost everyone thought it was doubling. Okay, so you're not any different. But it's not the pattern. So tell me about your thinking for a second, okay? Okay, and I want everyone to think the same way. I'm asking all of you, but specifically him, this question, okay? What did you come up with? Did you think it's doubling? And then you figured out the numbers that also doubled?
Yeah.
Who else did that? You figured out, okay, so in other words, you drew a conclusion, and then you came up with a set of numbers that fit your conclusion. In other words, you try to prove yourself right. Does that make sense? Who did that? Who tried to prove themselves right? Be honest. Right? That's what we do as humans, is we want to prove ourselves right. But it turns out that it was wrong, that that's not the pattern. So, let's keep going. Right here.
My pattern is 3, 6, 18.
Okay, hold on. So the numbers you're giving me are 3, 6, 18. Okay, so 3, 6, 18, yes, that fits the pattern. What's the pattern?
2 times 4 is 8. 3 times 6 is 18.
Good, so timesing, wait, say it again, so the pattern is?
2 times 4 is 8.
Uh-huh.
3 times 6 is 18.
Oh, okay. Do you hear that? So that's not the pattern. But her numbers fit the pattern. So now we have three data points, right? We have 2, 4, 8. We have 3, 6, 12, and we have, what was that, 3, 6, 18?
3, 6, 18.
3, 6, 18. Three sets of data points, all saying they all fit the pattern, yet we still don't know the answer. You get it? Okay, let's pause for a second. Try to give me three numbers that don't fit the pattern. Do your best to give me three numbers that don't fit the pattern. 1, 6, 7. 1, 6, 7. Okay, this is a good one. Okay, 1, 6, 7. These still fit the pattern. What's the pattern? It's an equation, okay. No, it's not really an equation, but that's your answer. Okay. So 1, 6, 7. We have four sets of data points now, all fitting the pattern. Okay, now let's reverse the clock to the beginning, when everyone thought it was double. Let's say you had given me the numbers then, and you had literally thought it was doubling then. Were you part of the crowd that thought it was doubling at first? No? Okay, let's say you did, though. Okay? Let's say you did. And you gave me numbers 1, 6, 7. And 1, 6, 7, are they doubling? No. So what would you know for a fact at that point if you went against your thinking and gave me three numbers that don't fit the doubling pattern? What would you know for a fact right when I said, yes, that fits the pattern? You would know for a fact that it's not doubling. Do you see how going against your own thinking actually gives you better information? Right? When we try to prove ourselves right, we think we're right. We get a positive result. What's called often a false positive. Okay? We get a positive, yeah, it fits the pattern. Or, yeah, it fits the pattern. But does it actually give you better information? Okay, let's do another one. Give me a set of numbers that you know you're thinking don't fit the pattern.
Blue, red, yellow.
Okay, we gotta go with numbers though. Actually, let me pause you for a second. Do you have a theory of what it is in your brain?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So try to come up with a theory of what you think it might be at this point, and go against your theory. Okay? So there's nothing wrong, in other words, with theorizing, with thinking, I think it's this. But instead of trying to prove yourself right, try to prove yourself wrong. Try to prove your theory wrong. You get it? Okay, let's go here.
I think it's the pattern
is
the set of numbers. So the question is, how about -2, -4, -8?
-2, -4, -8 would not fit the pattern. And what was your theory again? Three rational numbers. Okay, that's not it, but you're getting closer. Okay? You see how we're gaining better information when we go against our theories? Right? Do you see how the moment I said, well, no, if I gave you a positive, you would have. Okay, let's go here, though.
All right, so about 10, 20, and 30.
10, 20, and 30 fits the pattern. What would, oh, you're hoping it didn't fit the pattern. Okay, good. Give me another one.
5, 4, 3.
Oh, did you guys hear that one? 5, 4, 3. Doesn't fit the pattern. What is it? Yeah, in descending order. That's it. The numbers are going in ascending order.
3, 6, 12.
No, it did. Yeah, 3, 6, 12 does fit the pattern. Right? The numbers in ascending order.
You said it.
No, I said at the very beginning, yes, that's the pattern, but the pattern isn't doubling. The pattern is numbers in ascending order. Do you get it? Do you see what I'm saying? Do you see how going against your own thinking actually gives you better information? Now, let's pause here for a second. It's important that we come up with theories, right?
She did say she can't do
anything
with the lapel mic.
With the lapel mic?
Should I just get rid of it? Is that better? Let's do that. Okay, cool.
Try to muffle that one.
No.
It's not better? What if I go real loud? I'll yell the whole time. Okay, let's try that. Okay, again, do you see how going against your own thinking gives you better information? It actually gives you facts. But when we try to prove ourselves right, often when we get a false positive, we think we're right. But in reality, we're so often wrong. But we feel right, okay? Now, why do we think this way? Think about it. If you were in ancient times, okay, you're walking along in the grass, and you hear something ruffle, okay, in the grass. What might it be?
Snake.
A snake in the grass, right? And could a snake possibly kill you? Yeah, it could. I jump out of the way. Now, probably 99 out of 100 times, sure.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, even better. All right. So, I'll have to learn to speak with one hand, not two. Okay, so... If you're walking along in the grass and you think it's a snake and you jump out of the way, 99 out of 100, it was probably just the wind. Right? But you still survive. But the one time that it was actually a snake and you jumped out of the way, you saved your life. Right? You see how we are programmed to survive, so we're programmed to confirm what we think. Because it helps us survive. But in a rational and more complex world today, does trying to prove yourself right all the time really help you? It doesn't. You don't actually learn anything new. Right? And so often the major progressions that we've seen in our world happen because we challenged the norms. Take Jesus. And I'm not trying to go religious. He changed the world. Right? Right? He changed the world. Take Jesus. The woman taken in adultery. What did he say? Yeah, he who is without sin cast for the first stone. What is the principle he's teaching there? Hey, we all need forgiveness. What did they tell him to do with her? Stone her. Who prefers to live in a world where we go, let's forgive these people, as opposed to stoning? Who likes that? Is that a progression in our world? Whether you're religious or not, is that a good progression? Yeah, right? Let's take Martin Luther. Right? What did he do? His 95 theses. What was that all about?
He was challenging the church because he thought they were wrong and he wanted people to be able to learn themselves.
Right.
Being told what to think.
And ushered in the Protestant Revolution, right? That really did change the world and caused people to think and think more rationally and read the Bible, read, understand things, conjecture, right? That created so many things. There's arguments that created the Industrial Revolution, created so many of the progressions that we see in our world today. Okay, let's take George Washington. After winning the Revolutionary War, his soldiers wanted him to be what? A king. And that's what they knew, right? These weren't like, we won, you should be king, you're our guy. That was the form of government that they knew. They kind of thought, well, yeah, that's what we do next. And he went, no, we want a democratic republic. Sorry. And he rejected it. right? And then even when he became president and served two terms, what did he do? He could have won another term, could have kept going. He literally easily could have been president until he died, and he said, no, I want to create a peaceful transfer of power. And he did so. That changed the world. Did the Constitution and his actions change the world? It did. By 1900, there were four Democratic Republics in the world. Today, the majority of countries are. He changed the world, right? Isn't that powerful? By going against our original thinking. So it's really important that we learn to go against our own thinking. And not all of our thinking every day is going to change the world like that, but it does change you. Okay? Now let's go back to the principle again. You come up with a theory in your mind. It's okay to have theories. It's good to have theories. But go against your thinking. Try to really prove it. Try to really get after it. Okay? Now I'm going to say something that might feel a little uncomfortable, but bear with me. Okay? 76% of people are in the same political party as their parents. That's both sides. Okay, guys? That's both sides. You hear what I'm saying? 93% of people are in the same religion as their parents. Now, I'm not trying to attack their religion, but is it really yours if it was just told to you? Or do you need to think about it? Really challenge it. Really think it through. And discover what you really believe. That makes it yours. Regardless of whether it's your parents' religion or not, that's how you make it yours, right? You have to challenge your own thinking. That's principle number one, okay? Challenge your own thinking. Okay, principle number two. Tolerate your doubts and lower confidence. Okay, that's the second principle. Tolerate. In order to challenge your own thinking, you got to get comfortable with some doubt. Parents, do you feel pressure a lot when your kids are coming to you asking questions to have the answers? Do you? You gave up a long time ago. Good job, Mama. Depends on their age. I do. I feel pressure. When I'm in front of students, I feel pressure. You know what some of the most powerful words in the English language are? I don't know. Why?
Because it makes me vulnerable. And then it makes other people stop the thinking for themselves. You're like, ooh, hang on, what do I do?
Yeah. I don't know says, I'm open. Let's figure this out. I know says, hey, I've already figured that out. And that's okay if you really do know something. But do you really know it? Do the work to get there. And to get there, you have to tolerate doubts and lower confidence. Let me share a story with you. This guy, his name's MacArthur Wheeler. If you lived in the 90s, like I did, you might remember this guy. So MacArthur Wheeler, he learned from his nephew about being able to do invisible ink, so to speak, with just lemon juice. Who's ever done this, right? A piece of paper with some lemon juice, hello, or something like that, right? And then you go put it in the oven, or you warm it up with a candle or whatnot, and the little sugar crystals in the lemon start to appear, right? It's a kind of fun little thing, right? So his little nephew plays a trick on him, shows him this little trick, and then reveals to him this hidden message. And MacArthur Wheeler thinks, wow, so lemon juice makes things not show up on paper. And when I look at videotapes, who remembers those? That's like a paper. So if I just put juice over my face, I won't show up on camera. He literally jumps to this conclusion, and he's so confident in his conclusion, so confident, that he robs not one, but two federal banks. Pouring juice over his face, he goes to one bank and he literally grabs the money, takes off, goes down the street 10 minutes later, robs another bank, right? All the police do is go look at the video and they go, we know MacArthur. We we know this guy. They go pick him up, and they're hauling him off. And he's like, no, you know it was me. And they're like, we have you on camera. And he goes, I wore the juice. I wore the juice. He's that confident. Okay? This led two guys, Dunning and Kruger, at the time they were at Columbia University. They hear this story, and they start to ask themselves, the two psychologists, they start to ask themselves, why was this guy so confident? Right? Like, what is it about that level of confidence? He didn't go rob for a Snickers bar, right? He robbed two federal banks, okay? What makes a person that confident that this idea in their heads will work, right? So they end up doing a lot of research on MacArthur, and they find that he's not mentally handicapped. There's nothing, you know what I mean? Like, he's a normal guy. So they're like, what is going on here? So they devise a test to figure this out. And they take in about 100 people, and they create a cognitive test, kind of like a shorter ACT test, if you will, but it has a wider range of topics in it, right? They create this test, and here's the results. What they discovered is the red and green line. So the red line is your perceived score. So it's what people thought before they took the test, what they would score on the test. Does that make sense? And the green line is even after taking the test, what they thought, right, what they thought they scored. So before and after, they asked these folks, what do you think, how well do you think you will do, and how well do you think you did on the test? And the blue line represents what their actual results were. And you see the difference between the bottom quartile, so the bottom 25% of performers on the test, right? You see the difference in their confidence? See how much more confident they were than their actual ability, than their actual results, right? And what they discovered is the less educated a person, the more overly confident they are. Interesting, huh? The less educated a person, the more overly confident. So the bottom quartile, it's a difference of about 50 points, right? Second quartile, a difference of about 30 points. Third quartile is actually fairly spot on. They were fairly accurate in looking at themselves and going, yeah, this is about how smart I am, okay? And what's really interesting is the top quartile, the smartest group, they underestimated themselves. And it created what's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Okay? In one axis, you have confidence. In the other axis, you have actual experience. Okay? And confidence spikes when you know nothing. Right? And then who's had the experience? Who here has had the experience that the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know? Who's had that experience? It's a cool experience, but it's kind of daunting. You're like, whoa, there's more. Whoa, there's even more. Whoa, there's even more. Right? And what's interesting is, yeah, you can get to a place where your confidence begins to rise when you start getting to that expert level, but the expert never becomes as confident as the person that is completely ignorant. Isn't that fascinating? So if we are going to learn how to think, we got to get comfortable with this dip in confidence. Does that make sense? We've got to get comfortable with going, I don't know. Let's figure this out. Let me try. I don't know. Be comfortable with your doubt. Be comfortable with that lower level of confidence. And if you're not comfortable with that, if you let the pride get in the way and you go, no, no, I know, you're not learning. Okay? Now, again, it's okay to know certain things. I'm not saying that you can't know. You definitely can know, but there's a big difference between the person who's gone through the complexity, reached that other side of complexity, and has a level of confidence versus someone who doesn't know what they're talking about and the level of confidence that they have. Don't believe me? Go on Facebook and get into a political argument. And you'll see. All right. Okay, so the more we learn, the more we realize how little we know. That's powerful. That's how you have to get comfortable with not knowing. Okay. So again, second principle, tolerate your doubts and lower confidence. It's okay. Push through that. It's uncomfortable for a little bit. But if you actually kind of get excited by, ooh, I don't know that. Ooh, let's learn this. It becomes a superpower. Not knowing can be the drive to know. As opposed, oh, I already know. I already got this figured out. All right. Next principle, take ownership of your thinking and desires. Okay? Now I'm going to tell you another story. And this one I wrote down so we can really follow it closely because there's very specific elements of the story I want to break down. Okay? So, this is called projecting an internal drive. An internal drive is a desire, a want. Okay? Emmett decides to do his math homework. So he goes up to his room to begin. Who's ever done this? Yeah, a lot of you. The adults, you've never learned that? All right, yeah, you do it too. Okay, all right. So, but a strange thing happens as he sits down to start. He sharpens his pencils. He cleans his desk. He updates some software on his computer. He browses some websites for tips on his math. He leads through his math book. He starts to have second thoughts. He wonders if he should wait until his dad gets home in case he needs some help. What is Emmett beginning to do? Procrastinate. Exactly. He's beginning to take this desire that he had. He went up to his room to begin his math homework, but he's slowly but surely beginning to procrastinate. Okay? He doesn't leave the room because his desire to do his math is still greater than his desire not to. But he starts to procrastinate and forget his own drive. By alienating this drive, he begins to project it away from himself. That's what's called a psychological projection. You start to take this drive that you have here, so to speak, and you start to kind of push it out away from yourself, and you begin to forget about it. Right? It's now not your desire. Further and further, it gets away from yourself. Who's had this experience? Yeah, okay. He gradually becomes angry and annoyed with the whole thing. All he really needs to complete the projection, that is, to totally forget his own drive to do his math, is a likely candidate upon which he can project his drive. Youth, pay attention here, okay? Enter the unsuspecting victim. Emmett's mom gets home. She innocently asks, "How's the math going?" He responds, "Mom!" Emmett now feels pressure, not from himself, but from his mom. The projection is completed. Using self-deception, he convinces himself that it was not he, but his mom, that wants him to do the math. He thinks, she acts so sweet on the outside, but subtly, she's been pressuring him all along. Who's done this? Let's be honest. Let's get real. Who's done this? Mom! And now not only have we kind of pushed that desire away, now we're actually putting it on someone else, and we blame them for it. Okay, let's pause here for a second, okay? I need a parent volunteer, because it's not just the youth that do this. Okay, you ready? Come on up. All right, what I need you to do is think about something that you've been procrastinating. He looked right at his wife and looked guilty. Dad, you can. What is it?
Working on your house.
Working on your house. What specifically? What thing have you been procrastinating? Maybe than else. Procrastinating.
Every step of building the house.
Every step of building the house. Okay.
Yeah. So
what's the next step that you've been procrastinating?
Right now we're doing trim, so I'm procrastinating.
Doing the trim.
We're doing the trim right now, but we're procrastinating now.
Okay. All right. Now. We're going to contrast two things. I'm going to tell you a desire that I guarantee you don't have. You don't care about it. You don't want it. Okay? And we're going to compare that to doing the trim. Okay? So, what's your name?
Seth.
Good to meet you, Seth. I'm Adam. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Seth, if I came up to you, just some random dude on the street walked up to you and go, Seth, I really need you to go find a cow and paint it purple.
With pleasure.
With pleasure? Okay.
No, I'm not going to.
Yeah. Would you actually feel, and be real honest, search your feelings, would you actually feel pressure to do that thing?
No.
You wouldn't. No. Right? We all wouldn't. We're not like, I'm not going to go paint some person's gal purple, what the world, okay? But if I walked up to you and I said, hey, I know you're working on the house, how's the trim going? How do you feel? You feel a little, little guilt?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
It's important to me.
It's important to you, exactly. In other words, we will not feel pressure. Think about the pressures that you feel in your life. You will not feel pressure unless it's something you want in the first place. Okay, thank you, Seth. You see the difference? Good job, Seth. You see the difference? We will not feel pressure. So youth, how many of you feel pressure around your education? Raise your hands high. Let your parents see it. Raise it high. You feel pressure in your education, guess what? It's because you want one. It's because you want it. It's because you actually want to learn. Okay? So parents, I just gave you an awesome tool. Every time your child is procrastinating, feeling some pressure, ugh, I don't want to. If they didn't care, they'd be like, what? Paint a cow purple? Huh? I'm not going to do that, right? Do you see the difference? They won't feel pressure unless it's something that they actually want. Okay? Now, we yesterday talked about a son, right? Is it you? Yeah. Does he feel some
Yeah.
Yeah? Talk to him about that pressure. Really? Because you only feel pressure if it's something that you actually want in the first place. If you really, really don't care, you won't feel pressure around it. Help them see that. Okay? That might be a first step to discovering a purpose like we talked about yesterday, which then can lead to autonomy and choice and eventually mastery. Right? That progression. You see the difference there? Alright, so let's keep going with this. If Emmett were really innocent of the drive, he probably would have answered that he hadn't really begun and that that he was now going to begin. But he did not, because in his gut he knew that he wanted to do his math today. Since it feels clear that it wasn't him, it must have been somebody else. As his mom, the likely candidate, appears, he throws his projected drive onto her. Okay? Now, let's ask this. By projected, let me skip that. All right. Now, what if his mom really did nag him? Moms? Dads, have you ever nagged your kids? Spouses, have you ever nagged each other? Right? Raise your hands. Come on. Let's get real. Let's get on. Yeah. Okay. Now, what if his mom really did nag him to do his math? When what if she marched in and demanded he get it done now? Wouldn't that change the whole picture? Wouldn't Emmett be feeling her pressure instead of his own? No. Let's go back to Seth for a second. Seth, I really need you to paint that cow purple. No matter how much I nag and beg him, there's a crazy dude out there trying to get me to paint a cow purple. He's not going to do it. He's not going to feel pressure. It becomes a story that he's going to tell, but it's not something he's actually going to feel pressure around, right? It's only when I'm like, hey, we really need you to get that trim done, that you start to feel, oh, yeah. Right? Because it's something you want. You see the difference? So even if they're nagging, even if you're nagging, it doesn't matter. It will only hook you if it's something you want in the first place. All right, let me skip ahead. So our projections are not what they seem to be. We use self-deception, and we can literally blame others. Well, my mom wants me to, my dad wants me to, my spouse wants me to, whatever it might be. Right? We blame others, but it will only hook us if it's something we desire in the first place. So the third principle, before I even get into that, so let's break down these projections. This is kind of fun, actually. There's three types of projections that we can do. Again, projections only happen when we have the desire in the first place. So one obvious one that we just walked through with Emmett and his math, right, is other people. We can project onto other people. I mean, we concoct the whole situation in our brains as if they're pressuring us, and we blame them. If you're pressuring me, just get off my back. When literally, we would never have felt the pressure unless we wanted to do it in the first place, right?
So that's an obvious one.
But we can also even project onto a personal identity. Who's ever heard the phrase, I'm not good at that? Therefore, it absolves us from doing it, right? Right? That's the magic bullet, right? Oh, Mom, I'm just not good at that. So therefore, I'm absolved from having to do it. We project onto this personality trait, this characteristic, this thing about ourselves, and we try to absolve ourselves from having to do it. But again, you wouldn't even be doing that in the first place unless you wanted to. Does that make sense? So we project even onto personality traits. Parents, again, I just gave you another tool. You see that projection? And you ask the question, hey, you're projecting onto, I'm not good at that, you're projecting onto dyslexia or whatever it might be, right? And you tell yourself, sorry, Mom, I've got this thing, so it absolves me. It doesn't. It's a challenge, sure. It's something you have to conquer, but it doesn't absolve you, right? And you can even project onto other things. And this one's way more common than you would actually think. Who's ever blamed the computer? Right? Who's ever blamed the math book or the curriculum? Parents, this one is a big one. I've been in education for over 20 years now and running my company for over 16 years now. And I see parents do this. They'll come to us because they blame the previous curriculum. And I always have to stop them and go, well, wait a second. What's actually going on here? And we, more often than not, sometimes it is the curriculum, sometimes it's the bad curriculum. More often than not, it's the structures and accountability around that's not working, not the curriculum itself. And if you have a kid and you are highly motivated, almost any curriculum will work, frankly. The question is, are they motivated? Right? So what we tend to blame everything else, we project onto it, and it's the problem, not me. Right? Why do we want to make it the problem, not me? Because it's easier. It absolves us from having to do it. Exactly. Say it with your full chest. I love that. Awesome. Okay. So principle 3 is take ownership of your thinking and desires. Every time you feel pressure, that's because you want it. And parents, it's the same for you. It's because you want it. Pay attention to that. Take ownership of that. Take it away from the thing. The computer. Take it away from the personality trait. Take it away from the other person and bring it back to you and go, what do I really want here? And how am I going to fulfill it? Because if you train yourself over and over and over again to not take ownership of your drives, you train yourself to not actually get things done, to not actually grow, to always create an excuse. And if you do that, you won't learn how to think. Okay? Now, there's a lot more principles that I don't have time to get into to learn how to think. But these three are key. Because if you don't do these three, you can't do the rest. Okay? So again, they are. Challenge your own thinking. Be willing to challenge your own thinking. Really, take the most important things in your life, the big things, and ask yourself, why do I think that? What's the other side look like? Right? When you listen to media, are you listening to media you already think you'll agree with? Or are you listening to media that might challenge what you think? It's actually a lot more fun if you allow it. Now, you don't have to all of a sudden agree with the other side as well, right? That's not the point. The point is to challenge your thinking, broaden your thinking. Think outside of the box that you've built for yourself. And you'll learn a lot more. You'll grow from it. Okay, next one. Again, tolerate your doubts. Be uncomfortable. Whoa, wait, I haven't thought about it that way. Sometimes it even hurts, right? A doubt comes up. Ooh, that's a good one. You know, oftentimes I have people when I share this presentation will come up to me and go, well, what about God? I don't know that I want to doubt God. I'll tell you just my own personal experience with that. It's awesome. Doubt it. Do you have doubts? Doubt it. Go for it. Go through that battle. Why? Because what you get on the other side of that is so much more powerful. You get an actual relationship with God, in my opinion. You get real honesty with God. Instead of just telling God what you already think about God. See the difference? It's the simplicity that comes on the far side of complexity. Not the near side that you want. The simplicity, the Dunning-Kruger, right? The simplicity on the near side is, I already know everything. The simplicity that comes on the far side of complexity, that's powerful. Right? That's a real relationship. That's real thinking. That's real understanding. Alright, hint number three. Take ownership of your drives and desires. Okay? Take ownership of your thinking. Stop pushing it away, blaming. Sorry, I'm dyslexic. Or sorry, I'm this. Or sorry, I'm that. Or mom, or dad, or spouse, or computer, or whatever. Take ownership of the drive and figure it out. Will there be challenges? Of course there will be. Will some people nag you along the way? Who's married? I mean, that should just be part of the vow, right? Yeah. Of course there will be. But you take ownership of your desires, your thinking, your drives, and figure out what you're going to do about them. Okay? All right, lastly, I'll end with a story. There once was a carpenter who was getting ready to retire. He goes to his boss, the contractor, and he goes, boss, we've built a lot of homes together, we've done a lot of good things. It's been a great career, but it's time to be done. And his boss says to him, oh, you know, I'm really sad that you're going. Can I just ask as a personal favor that you do one more home? You do one more home for me. Do all the carpentry work on that, on this last house, and then you'll be done. 3 months. And he says, okay, yeah, one more home, we'll call it a career. He goes, okay. Who's ever done this before? You get to work, you get to going, and you cut some corners. You maybe use some inferior materials. You're coming to the end of a career, end of high school, end of middle school, end of the school year, end of whatever. And you just don't give it your all. Who's ever done that? Yeah. And that's what he did. Finishes the home. Home is completely done. His boss invites him out and says, hey, I'm going to inspect the house. He walks through the home and inspects everything. Walks out to the carpenter and he hands him the key. And he says, this is your house, my gift to you. And the carpenter first is really grateful, but then privately goes, if I knew it was going to be my house, I would have used these materials, not those. I would have done these things, not that. I would have changed this and added that. Oh, all the things I would have done. So it is with our own lives. Right? So it is with our own lives. We will cut this corner and cut that. Not take ownership of our thinking. Not take ownership of our drives. Not truly think for ourselves. Not be willing to challenge our own thinking because it's uncomfortable. And then we live in the house we built, don't we? We live in that house. So my challenge to you today is to really want it. You said, hey, it's better to learn how to think, not be told what to think. If you really believe that, do something about it. Thanks, everyone.